The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will wait to call the... I like hearing myself twice.
Would it be okay if I left and came back again so you can help me?
Okay.
I know we're going to need...
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order when we have a quorum. Jennifer will let me know when we have a quorum, and then we'll just break in and officially convene. But we have a full agenda for the day, so we are going to start with when we actually officially go into session, we will pass the minutes. But we will start hearing House File 3755. So when we have a quorum, I will move House File 3755. So right now it's informational. We have who's testifying? Is that Joe Bagnoli? Mr. Bagnoli, want to come up front here? You'll also have some state fair questions, just so you know, about a famous band. But anyways, okay, so when we have a quorum, I will move the David's Goldman's Bill 3755. We do have an amendment. When we have a quorum, I'll move the amendment. Could you describe briefly what the amendment does?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Bagnoli with Winthrop & Weinstein Law Firm. I am here representing the Minnesota Institute of Public Finance, which is a collection of folks that are involved in the issuance of public debt, advising cities, counties, and all public entities on the issuance of public debt. The amendment would delete Section 1, which has to do with issuance of debt for school districts. We got a little bit ahead of...
Okay, excuse me, Mr. Bagnoli. Yes. We do have a quorum now, so I'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Joy moves the minutes. Any additions or corrections?
No, looks great.
Okay, with that, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. So now I will move House File 3755. I will move the H3755A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Gomez. So now we have House File 3755 as amended. Now, if you could please, first of all, is there anyone other than Mr. Bagnoli wish to testify on the chairman's bill? Is there anyone wishes to testify against the chairman's bill? Will the department want to, where's the department? You're the department today? Oh, okay. Oh, well, we should probably wait. I'm just kidding. You're doing fine. You're doing just fine. We will start. So if you could please state your name, who you represent for the record, please, sir, to the bill 3755 as amended.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli on behalf of the Minnesota Institute of Public Finance. The Minnesota Institute of Public Finance, just to describe what it is, it's a group of folks, bankers, lawyers, and public finance advisors who are involved in the issuance of debt from the state to the counties, any public entity that issues debt. And I describe this bill every year as somewhat like the department's technical bill. The purpose of the bill is to, as the department, we are the only people that actually work in this area, that work on these statutes, and as we go through, sometimes with federal changes, there's conformity issues and or cleanups of language or harmonization, as it may be, or things to make issuance to go more smoothly. So that's what this bill is. It's meant to be, and generally is, very non-controversial, but it's very fun, not as fun as some other bills that we've had, but you have had, but this is what this is. So with the amendment, should I describe the bill, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. I thought you just did. All right, describe it again.
There are two provisions left. What would be after the amendment? First provision is essentially a carryover from last year. Last year, we made a number of changes designed to harmonize public notice periods to 10-day public notice periods for different kinds of issuances. We had, the state had all sorts of different dates. This, we missed one last year. So this would change the public notice period to 10 days for the one that we missed. The second provision relates to the issuance of debt for port authorities. Port authorities are similar to other public entities for reasons that no one is quite clear on. The current law requires Port Authority debt to be structured as serial bonds, with principal maturing annually or semi-annually up to maturity. This doesn't allow the port to get term bonds, which in many cases are cheaper for the public, and the debt structures are better. This change would allow essentially the port to do either, port authorities to do either sorts of debt. And we have talked to Port Authorities folks. I would say, as a general matter, we pass this around to some of the counties, the league, the MMB, and as far as I know, there is no controversy or concern about either of these changes.
Thank you for that description. Very well done. Now, is there, does the department want to testify on this, or? Not at this time. Not at this time. Okay, anyone else from the audience like to testify for this bill or with concerns? Member questions? Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, Beggs. Appreciate it. In your testimony, you had said that, first, the amendment, it doesn't seem super clear to me. But anyways, in your testimony, you said that it was changing to 10 days, but in the bill that I see, and I don't see it reflected in the amendment, it says at least 20 days.
Mr. Bagnoli.
Can you get confirmation on that?
Mr. Bagnoli? Or Need House Research?
Could I have the bill? I think.
Oh, Mr. Cope.
Mr. Chair and Representative Roach, I think you're referring to section one of the bill, which had to do with school bonds, and that provision was deleted with the A1. The 10 days that Mr. Bagnoli was referencing is with section two, and the relevant text is on page 2, lines 21 and 22, and the effect of that change would be lowering the minimum notice period from 14 days to 10 days.
Representative Roach?
Okay, thank you. That makes more sense. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Roach. Any other questions for members? Okay, with that, the motion will be 3755 as amended, be laid over. But before we, as long as we got Mr. Bagnoli here, we need a few things straightened out. How are you doing on the state fair with Jefferson Starship?
Members of the committee, I'm not here on behalf of the state fair, although I do represent the state fair. And oddly, I walked over with Representative Freiberg, who has a relationship with Jefferson Starship, and he said, is that going to come up? And I said, I don't know, I should assume that if I put myself within the chair's gaze at this table that it will come up, so I apologize, Representative Freiberg. Mr. Chair, I have no idea, but I'm working very hard on it, and I will trust that if we can get them there, we will. I've heard recently that they're, I think, performing in Wisconsin in the next 2 months, so or somewhere in the southeast of the state, perhaps closer to you, so I will check on that and get back to you. But they're not at the state fair as of yet.
Just so the committee, is very important to the committee, Jefferson Starship will be in Albert Lea in August at the Freeborn County Fair, and they sing one of my top 10 favorite songs of all time.
Jane.
Thank you.
You're just playing a game, Mr. Chair.
Playing a game. Okay, any more questions? I'll just wrap it up and say you do a great job with this, Mr. Bagnoli, with the public finance bill. There's been a long history of people that have presented this, and it is important. It's very important. So with that, I'll renew my motion at House File 3755 as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Thank you, members. Okay, Chair, item you. Next, we will go to Representative Duran. I will move House File 4161. And let's see here. What are we doing? Any amendments? Yeah, there is. Okay. So, Representative Duran, welcome to the committee, sir. I will move the H4161A2 amendment, and that gets, that's your amendment, correct?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, I will move the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have 4161 as amended, members. Two-year bill, Representative Duran.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to speak to you guys today about House File 4161, about some local government aid for a new city that's going to be created here pretty soon. I was reassured that this is going to be non-controversial, but Representative Joy mentioned the fact that this is my first time in front of you guys today, and I did not bring treats, so I'm worried about how I was going to be treated by him.
That's amazing. You don't.
Well, I'm in a forgiving mood today. You can do that, and you'll be charged a donut interest per day. So let's get on with it. Okay, two-year bill, sir.
And I will actually pass it off to my testifier today, who will explain more of what the needs are for us.
Is it Mr. Lon?
Yeah, it's pronounced Lane.
Lane, Mr. Yep. Lane, if you could state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, thank you. It's Chris Lane, Northern Township Administrator. The last name is spelled L-A-H-N. So, Chair Davids and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on HF 4161. My name, as I said, is Chris Lane, and I serve as the administrator for Northern Township, which was recently granted incorporation and will become the City of Northern following the November 2026 election and seating of our first council. HF 4161 addresses a structural issue in how local government aid is applied to newly incorporated cities. Under current law, LGA calculations rely in part on prior year aid amount. For an established city, this works exactly as intended. For a newly incorporated city, there is no prior year LGA. As a result, the formula does not produce any meaningful level of aid to the city in the initial years, and instead phases in over time. That phase-in does not reflect what the formula otherwise indicates the city should receive based on its characteristics and needs. In our case, estimates show the formula would generate around $400,000 once fully realized. HF 4161 corrects this by setting the base year aid at that formula-derived amount so that the standard LGA calculation functions as intended from the outset. This is the same correction the legislator provided to Rice Lake and Baldwin when they were recently incorporated, and we're asking for the same treatment here. Timing matters as well. Northern will be an operating city in 2027. Under current law, the formula would not begin until 2028. It would not fully reflect our actual aid, as I've mentioned, until years later. HF 4161 allows the correct formula amount to begin in 2027, aligning funding with when the city is actively providing services. This is especially important given what Northern currently is taking on. We are actively executing a $20 million regional wastewater project, $13 million in just the first phase of it alone, to effectively complete the sewering of Lake Bemidji, our region's most significant natural resource. The project has been a regional goal for more than 50 years. When finished, it will serve hundreds of residents along with the DNR regional headquarters and Lake Bemidji State Park. So LGA is not paying for this project, but what it will do is help a newly formed city to cover its operating costs while managing a major infrastructure commitment at the same time. Receiving our full formula amount in 2027 makes that manageable. To be clear, this bill does not increase LGA beyond what the formula provides. It ensures that a newly incorporated city receives the amount the formula already supports on a timeline that reflects when it is actually functioning as a city. So thank you for your consideration of Bill HF 4161, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Lane, what will the population, approximate population of Northern be?
The last number that I had seen from the state demographer, I believe, is 3,883, so it's just shy of 4,000.
What is the size? Is it the size of a whole township, 6x6, or is it?
About a quarter of our original landmass was annexed away over the years, but otherwise the remaining 75% of it is still intact. So we're the north half of Lake Bemidji. About essentially half of Lake Bemidji is on Northern Township, and then it goes northward from there for, you know, a few miles.
Okay, okay. Is there a city within the city?
No. The only other city in that immediate area is Bemidji itself, the city of Bemidji. South half of Lake Bemidji will be city of Northern, north half of Lake Bemidji.
Okay, I'm just wondering that. So it's pretty good size.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Because we have down in Fillmore County, Rushford Village, which is a city that has the cities of Peterson and Rushford within a city. Mm. And so I had some questions about that, but if that's not the way it is, we're fine. Representative Hewitt and then Swedzinski. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is a topic that I'm concerned about because one of the cities in Dakota County, I believe it's the newest city in Minnesota, is Empire, which is in Representative Roach's area. Just for a topic of discussion with LGA, when does a city actually become eligible? Do they have to come here to get that eligibility, or do they automatically one day get a check from us? I'm just kind of curious if staff can talk about that a little bit.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hewitt, cities do not need to come to the legislature in order to receive LGA. If a city incorporates before July 1st, they're eligible for LGA in the following calendar year. For any city like the city of future city of Northern that incorporates after the second half of the year, they aren't eligible for an additional calendar year. So in the case of Northern, they wouldn't be eligible for LGA, as the testifier said, until 2028. The other thing that the legislature has done historically with newly incorporated cities is provide what's provided in Section 1 of the bill, whereas the testifier described this well, where the formula takes could take a few years to phase in, but the first section of the bill allows the full formula amount to be paid to cities in the initial years of incorporation.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the indulgence. And I think this is really, really important when we have these new cities formed. I know Empire is looking at their infrastructure. They have, it's like a housing boom down there, and they don't have the necessary other than their own taxes, but they're also, I mean, we're looking at the same thing with EMS around the state or fire or police coverage, and so I think we really need to dive into this. And I appreciate Representative Duran, and remember, I'm going to judiciary soon, for bringing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt, I think. So, members, we have done this in the past. We've had, last year was, what, there was two towns were created. Baldwin. Okay, that's right. Chair Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to the testifier, has there been, you know, from a creation of a city aspect, is there some concern about continued annexation if it's already started within the township? Is there concern? Is that kind of why this is happening? Is that part of it, or is it just other ideas?
Mr. Lane.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Our understanding of the legal process, I'm not a lawyer, is that once the incorporation has taken effect, you are a city, it is next to impossible for annexation really to happen unless it's kind of a mutually agreed upon situation.
Chair Swedzinski. Anyone from the audience wish to testify in support of this bill or with concerns? Department? Not at this time? Okay. Okay, so any other member questions? Chair Gomez? You're okay. Okay. Okay, so would you like to wrap it up, Representative Duran?
Thank you for your support.
Okay, that's the way to wrap it up. I will renew my motion that House File 4161, as amended, be laid for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Bill is laid over as amended. Item next, we go to House File 495, Representative West. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I knew that. Representative Johnson is going to present Representative West's bill. Welcome to your committee, Representative Johnson. I do not see any amendments, so if you'd please present the bill to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, co-chair, members. This bill essentially is dealing with the rising cost of child care and how, as we've talked about it many times, how it's getting more and more difficult for families. And what this does is that tries to address it. Now, there's been many conversations about how we get more people into daycare, more centers, more and stuff like that. But while that is going on, we still have families that are having issues paying the bills. And this one addresses that. It's going to be about helping some of the affordability and the fact that we have many, many families that could use any help right now to to help them with their child care. Included in your packet is a revenue analysis, and then within that revenue analysis, it shows you how many families that could take advantage of this. And so, which was 81,700 returns were done, that would an average decrease the tax by 639. So what this does is this actually takes off the limits as far as the limits that are in place right now. So they can just deduct that from their income and get those tax refunds. Now, this is applicable to licensed daycares and facilities. So that's where this stuff. So I have a family. I'm going to tell a story right now. Is I have somebody that works for me, and they are nowhere near what you'd consider wealthy or anything like that. They're basic middle income family. They're paying $20,000 for two kids going into daycare. And so it's just getting to be more and more challenging for families, and that's just for two kids. And you start taking in three kids, four kids, you can see where that dollar keeps going up, and it becomes more and more challenging. So this is an attempt, an opportunity for us to step up and recognize that and say, hey, we are here to help you out. We recognize it. This is going to be a direct tax refund, apply towards your income, and get that taken care of. And I think that's very important as we recognize that and tell our families, we do hear you. We do understand the challenges you have. We do understand the expenses that are going up. Some of that is because there isn't as many places to put their children. But while we fix that and while we address that, we have to recognize it's a fact, and we have to try and help them out. And so that is basically what this bill is all about. And I'd like to sit here for any questions.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Before we get to member questions, we'll go to the audience. We do have one virtual testifier, but before we get to the testifier, is there anyone wish to testify on behalf of or with concerns on the bill, the department? Not this time. Okay, so with that, let's go to the virtual testifier, then we'll go to member questions. Virtual testifier is Annell Velasco, St. Paul resident.
Hi, yes. Thanks for having me. Good morning, Chair Davids and members of the committee. My name is Annell Velasco. I'm a St. Paul resident and a mother of three kids. I am a working mom, and I am here to testify against HF 495. That might seem surprising. As a parent, I understand the desire to offer quick relief from the high cost of childcare. Like our prior speaker was saying, like it's very expensive, $20,000 for two kids. I heard that figure and I went, yeah, and that's at a very low cost childcare. That is not a kind of the numbers that I'm seeing for my two kids who are still in childcare. But this bill is not a real solution. It's a small patch around the edges of a system that needs structural reform altogether. Childcare owners are struggling to keep their doors open. Teachers are underpaid and often forced to work second jobs just to get by and make ends meet. And parents are paying more and more for care that they cannot afford to lose. I certainly can't. The system is broken. And while I appreciate this is a step, the system needs to be addressed because it will not fix itself. We cannot solve an infrastructure failure with a line item gesture. Childcare needs to be funded as the public good it provides, not thrown a small bone that disproportionately benefits folks who make more money. This bill reduces the taxable income by the amount paid by parents for childcare, less any amount covered by a childcare assistant. Meaning folks who make less money and have assistance provided will also experience less of a benefit from this bill. Additionally, this bill doesn't address childcare providers or teachers at all, going back to trying to get more children into care, trying to open more places for care. We're not addressing that here. So we should build a stronger childcare system, not merely soften the consequences of one that is broken and weak. So I urge you to vote against this bill and to instead address the systematic problem that our child care industry altogether is fighting and working against. And I will continue to stand with child care owners, directors, teachers, and fellow parents to demand that the legislators support the whole structure as a public good instead of offering tailored and exclusive bills to say that we've addressed this problem. I welcome any continuing conversation, and please feel free to reach out to me if anyone would like to discuss this further. Thank you so much for your time.
And thank you so much. Does anybody have any questions for the testifier at this time? Okay. Any questions? Member questions? Thank you for your testimony. She's gone. Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson, especially for pinch hitting for another representative. I know that's not always easy. So we agree child care costs are rising. It's a burden on Minnesota families. Can you help me? As I read the bill, there's no real caps on who would receive this benefit. Can you help me understand why there hasn't been any motions to target? I know in previous committees there was ideas of saying if you're above a certain tier in our income tax that you're not eligible for this, to make sure it's not being used for those who can pay these costs. Maybe just an open-ended question here at the start. Why not target this more as it's currently drafted?
Representative Johnson.
Well, I think if we go back to the revenue analysis, this would help over 81,000 families right now. And so that's a big number that it would go and help right away. Mm-hmm. I guess we wanted to get this out there and start addressing that, is, and also to take into consideration, if you have more income, does that mean you have to, because you have a higher income, you should stop having kids so you don't get that deduction? I think it's there to address everybody. We also understand, I think, recognize the higher incomes and stuff like that. This is addressing, and you look at this number, is addressing middle-income people, and it really is. So I think that was the purpose of this bill, and not just say go back and start targeting and start analyzing who shouldn't and who shouldn't get it. Right now, this is something that is going out there so every Minnesotan can take advantage of this, and I think that's the most fair way we can do it.
Representative Smith.
I mean, Representative Johnson, this is not free money. This is $100 million that is not going to go to help those same families through various things like the working family tax credit or child credit. So, like, it's not just, money that we can take without thinking of the consequences. And the number you're giving is just the people who have families who have people in daycare, which, of course, is a lot of members in our state. My question is why aren't we focusing on those families that are most burdened by the cost of daycare, and those higher-income families that are paying that still can get help through some other programs, but not by being able to deduct that from their taxable income when they don't necessarily need that? Maybe I'll focus the question here on, like, a scenario. Like, imagine a very, very wealthy Minnesota family that sends their kids to New England for a summer camp for 8 weeks. That's a licensed facility, or even somewhere in state. My reading of the bill is that the cost of that very, I would say, high income child care would be able to be deducted under this bill, which I don't think most Minnesotans would be in favor of. I mean, am I reading this bill correctly in that aspect?
Representative Johnson.
Yeah.
Well, if I understand I'm assuming you're hypothetical out there, that there is a, I guess I'm trying to get back to, this does cover only licensed daycare, which is more restrictive than actually some of the other, when you go to the federal and the other grant, the other amounts that have out there, the $7,500, this is only for licensed daycare. It doesn't take into account child care expenses and stuff like that. It's only licensed. So if you're going to go with your example of, I don't know, what was your example again? Some place out there? Is that a real place?
It's summer camp, I think.
Yeah.
Summer
sure.
camp.
Yeah.
Maybe, let's go to Sean Williams to answer that question.
Chair Davids and members, the bill limits the subtraction to daycare costs, which are amounts paid to a child care center, family child care center, or group family child care center that's licensed under Chapter 142B. So I guess there's nothing specifically that would allow a summer camp to qualify. I guess if that summer camp happened to be also licensed as a child care center, potentially it might, but I think that a typical summer camp that's not probably would not qualify for this subtraction.
It seems like a good
Yeah, I could say I checked with the chair of children and families, their DFL chair, Katiza Watin, who confirmed to me that like a lot of these high-end summer camps or daycare centers that are very expensive are licensed to the state because they have to be because they're still caring for children. So my point is I think this is far too expansive for specifically, as one of the testifiers said, higher income families being able to get a tax break that they don't need, while there are other better programs to serve families who are struggling with child care costs.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Smith covered a lot of what I was going to cover, so I'll just sum it up. I mean, this is a very expensive bill, as we can see from the revenue note, and it is not clear how many people this could potentially help because it is an uncapped program. But I did want to just clarify the point that this is a subtraction. It is not a credit. It is not a refundable credit. And so because it's a subtraction, you know, and we don't have a tax expenditure report, but we know that the standard deduction is already very high. And so even low to middle income families actually will not be able to take advantage of this program. Like the author mentioned, it will be folks who have a high enough tax liability that this subtraction in their taxable income would actually apply. And so I just do want to clarify that for the community, for the committee. But my concern is, again, this is an uncapped program, and so this is just an estimate of, like, maybe the low end based on Department of Revenue's estimates. But the other piece is, for this very expensive program, there is also no pay for. And so one also underlined Representative Smith's point that, you know, this is not just free money. If we had $100 million lying around, we would probably be best to use it in investing in the child tax credit and making it even more generous, because that is a credit and that is also a refundable credit. And so if you are a family in Minnesota that, you know, is actually in need of cash for childcare, for expenses, for raising your kids like we want you to, that puts money back in your pockets. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I appreciate Mr. Representative Johnson for carrying this bill on behalf of somebody else, the chief author. You know, that was a long mic. You know, we should really be blind to the fact that, you know, healthcare costs or daycare costs are expensive no matter how much your income is. And whether you're upper income, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a teacher, whether you're an engineer, whether you're a welder, across the spectrum, health or daycare costs are high. And I think we need to be focused on the realities of allowing people to keep their own money is not a giveaway, right? People being able to write off the costs that they are incurring, right? It's not like these costs don't get incurred. They're writing off costs that they went out, wrote a check, supported a local business that's more than likely based out of someone's home, and would just like to be able to write that off. You know, I appreciate the concern of the cost of this thing. Well, there are many things that we can do to benefit kids that don't cost us a dime. Whether it's the other credits that we potentially could pass, and all we have to do is say we support it and allow businesses to donate, and those dollars would be focused in on helping kids across the spectrum, especially poor kids, go to a school that they would like to go to that they can't currently afford. Wow, that seems like a pretty cheap one. I said, if we want to maybe change this bill to address the amount of money that you can make in order to qualify, let's do it. But then let's also do other things that allow individuals to make conscious decisions that are poor, that also give them the tools they need to escape to school districts of their own choice.
Thank you. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the point has been made, but I feel the need to reiterate
because, yes, childcare is expensive for lawyers and for doctors. I am a lawyer, my husband is a lawyer, and we had to pay for childcare. But the difference is our expenses in childcare allowed – it was hard. We had to, you know, pull back on some things. Our vacations weren't quite as long, et cetera. But the difference is we didn't have to quit our jobs and choose between whether or not we were going to work and whether we were going to afford childcare. And that's the reality that we're seeing here, is that people are making choices about their future careers because they can't afford childcare. And using low-income children as an example in this scenario, just it does not, it's not fair, because we know it's not going to benefit them. That this tax break is going to benefit people who are wealthier and who, you know, as per usual, the tax code benefits those who have more money versus those who have less money. And so we're giving yet another giveaway to individuals who could afford, they would have to tighten their belts, but could afford childcare, as opposed to folks who literally cannot and are deciding to quit their jobs and delay their careers, and frankly, keep folks in the cycle of poverty that doesn't allow them to move forward. And I have to note, because this typically falls on the women in the household, there's a reason why we don't have women who are partners at law firms who continue moving up in their careers to become higher level doctors or managing hospitals. It's because they make the choice to stay home with their children because they cannot afford to do anything else. And so I think it's really important when we're using examples to talk about tax policy that we're doing, we need to look at the people who are going to benefit the most from it and be really honest about that. And the reality is this provision would mostly benefit people who are already wealthier. It would benefit somebody like me and my husband. And that's not what we need to be doing right now.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Representative Johnson, you've done a great job on a bill that's not yours. I've got a couple. I'm going to be kind of busy when we get back from break. Maybe you could help me out.
I'm here to help. Always here to help.
Okay. You want to wrap it up?
Yes. Thank you for those comments, and a couple things I'd just like to, you know, like to add.
Excuse me, Representative Johnson. I missed when peripheral vision. Chair Gomez.
Thank you. So I appreciate the conversation that's happened about this bill, and, you know, as we've all kind of acknowledged, the cost of childcare is a major issue across our state. But it's not just the cost of childcare. I want to bring us back to our testifier who joined us, who talked about all of the different parts of the system that are not working. And, you know, so there aren't slots for childcare in a lot of parts of the state. There aren't childcare centers. There just aren't places available. The pay for teachers is really low, and so it's very hard for people to make that work. The cost, of course, is an issue for families. But what this particular kind of solution is, I mean, we talked about how it's untargeted, it's very expensive. If we looked at the distribution of this and who the benefits go to, you know, it would, because it's uncapped, and because, as Representative Lee pointed out, it's structured as a subtraction and not, you know, a credit or a refundable credit, that it will disproportionately go to higher income people. And so spending this amount of money in a sort of expansive, expensive, untargeted way that will address one part of one of the many complex interacting failures of this system is, to me, you know, this is just a lot of money to be doing something that will make so little impact on the overall issue with. But you know, I think that this is that the cost of childcare is one of the issues that we all know impacts every corner of our state, and so there is great potential for us to come together and, you know, work more on solutions. So I appreciate this being a part of that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. If you wrap it up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And I'd like to just point out, thank you for all the comments, Mr. Chair and members. It's important to understand what this bill is and what it isn't. We all recognize the child care situation is broken and we need to deal with it. That's something that gets brought up year after year after year. Does that mean we need to ignore the families that are suffering and having to pay that increased price while we try to fix these other issues? No. This is not a bill that is designed to fix the system. It is designed to help families who are struggling. And an example got brought up as far as, if you want to bring it back, say you have a family, a working class family, middle income, and they're trying to decide whether the one or the husband or the wife should stay home or go back to work. And now you look at it, it's like, okay, example here, daycare will cost us $20,000. Maybe that other person is going to be making roughly around $20,000 to $40,000. Well, now you can start saying, well, yeah, but that $20,000 of what you're making can now be applied and deducted to help us out and help out that situation. Actually helps that decision for somebody to decide to go out and start working in the working world. So I think it, and I know we can get caught up in who it helps, who it doesn't help, it's unfair here, it's unfair there. I don't think we should get caught up in that. We are helping everyday Minnesotans with this bill. We're not looking at, you know, should you or shouldn't you get this. We are helping them, and we're not judging whether they where they're spending their money and the decisions they're making. This is getting money back out to everyday Minnesotans that are hurting while we try to address the child care situation and whatever those solutions are. But we can't continue to go year after year after year trying to solve a problem and have Minnesotans hurting because we can't solve that problem. So thank you, members. Thank you.
Thank you. Our new Representative Johnson renews his motion. Or was it my motion? I will renew my motion that House File 495 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I'm going to be handing the gavel over to Vice Chair Joy for 4321 and 3902. I have to go to G23 for a bonding hearing for my reelection bill, so let's hope it passes.
You too, huh?
Me too.
Add your name tag and put it over Greg's. Or select the switch.
We'll silence Greg.
You should take it. There you go. That's what Norris does, so that is. We just do what Norris does.
Thank you, Representative Zluskar. In front of us, we have HF 4321, and if you can explain your bill to us.
Thank you, Chair. And members, House File 4321 is a pretty simple bill, and many of you are familiar with it if you've ever done flexible spending accounts. And this bill allows employees to take their own money, allocate it to an employer-sponsored flexible spending account for dependent care. So what this is a federal conformity bill. That maximum allocation was $5,000. It's been moved to $7,500. It gets us into a situation that allows Minnesotans to be able to have $7,500 as a deductible amount federally. And who qualifies for this? This is children under the age of 12. It also applies for children that have physical or mental disabilities that are incapable of caring for themselves and they live with the taxpayer more than half of a year. It also, you may not know this, but it also allows eligibility for the spouse of a taxpayer who needs care for physical or mental assistance. And many people have used flexible spending accounts for this. So basically, this is just a provision that allows Minnesotans to have a little tax relief, and I appreciate you hearing the bill today.
Thank you, Representative Zluskar. I move H 4321 is before the committee. And you have any testifiers for? Mm-hmm. Yes, no? Okay, no testifiers. I'll move to member discussion. Representative Lee.
Is there someone here who wants to testify on the bill, actually?
That's usually...
Chair Davis should be here for this.
We will enter.
He won't believe us when he's yes. Going home. It must have been something you said that she hasn't...
It must be the new chair.
Thank you, Joanna, for weighing in on this. I feel honored that Chair Davis can't get you to speak and take opinions. I'm really excited you're jumping in the crowd to come up and speak. So It's all yours. All
right. Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director for the Department of Revenue. I'm excited that I get to speak on this bill, so thank you, Chair. The administration supports this bill. We adopt this in the governor's supplemental budget by updating a date to the current Internal Revenue Code, and so that provision is picked up with our general conformity update.
Perfect. Any question, member discussion? Or? Thank you very much. I will turn it over to Chair Gold. Nothing? Yep. I have nothing. I will, Vice Chair Joy moves HF 4329, possible inclusion tax ominous bill. And that'll. We make this fast.
That was easy.
You want to take ship, Chair Joy does.
Next bill, do we have? Do we have music to play? You know, kind of when you're in timeout. We are waiting for Representative Igo to come. That's our only order of business left, I think.
I think everybody's in bonding this morning. It's like the last day on earth for bonding downstairs.
Oh. The crowds are down there.
So, I just came from this. That's why.
Okay.
Should we have Howard present this?
Or I don't know. I don't want to put you on the spot or anything.
Architects.
Howard's a co-author, or not a co-author, but you know this bill.
I do. Can I text Cody?
What do you think, Sam, Jim? Sam Scott.
Huh? There's a can the yeah, we'll department wait. Weigh in on this? No. He was Sam went to go get it.
We'll wait for Sam to get back.
Okay.
No, wait till Representative Igo
We don't want Mike Howard to just Spencer's donuts. That would be too annoying.
Spencer would be really upset. Yeah. Well, thanks for the donuts, Representative Howard.
It is generosity.
In a tied house, and that would be kind of a Democrat presenting a Republican.
I do too.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm
pretty sure this bill is important.
Why are we even presenting it then? Yeah. Isn't that the worst time? Waste of time.
Oh, I'd have to wait. Patrick would have to come back and remind me what next week.
Well, I guess
next week's going to look like that. What am I doing next hour? I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Oh, I can
our mics are still on.
Yeah, tomorrow or tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, just an update, there will be no tax committee meeting tomorrow, if I just wanted everybody to know.
I'm just excited.
I know.
We built the city.
Members, we are going to declare a short recess. Call the chair.
Is it over there?
Yeah. I mean,
I think it's down. They know it.
We'll call this meeting back to order. Representative Igo, I will move that 3902 is moved in front of the committee and look forward to hearing about it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Tax Committee. I'm thankful to be joining you today. I do want to add, because it is my first day in taxes, there's Krispy Kreme donuts that'll be getting passed around for everyone. So, thank you for the opportunity today to talk about something that I think we're all going to like.
Spencer, I think you have...
And I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair, yes.
Can we talk about the amendment?
Yes.
I'll move the amendment in front of the committee.
Yes, so members, this is just kind of a housekeeping amendment I've been working on with House Research and House staff to get the bill in the shape I'd like. Just for precedent's sake, to make sure I go through it all, we're just changing the definition on line 116 for population, making a few changes to the geographic balance on line 2.9, and changing the wording around funding on line 4.11.
Okay, and we will thank you, Representative Igo, and we will motion to move the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment's on. To your bill, Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, House File 3902 is a bill working on a very successful program that we initiated in our state a few years ago called the State Housing Tax Credit. The State Housing Tax Credit's been a wonderful tool to not only create new housing in our state, but create public-private partnerships and incentivize development all across the state of Minnesota. The bill in front of us today is going to work on a couple major things. One of those things is going to be adjusting use for the program so that it can partner with the Workforce Housing Development Program, which is really critical. So as we're seeing the program become more and more effective, in fact, this year, when the funds came up for use, in under 2 hours, all the funds were spoken for and being put to housing projects around the state. So we want to make sure there's more money out there for this housing tax credit to partner with. The second adjustment we're looking to make on the bill is around geographical balance. So when you look at state demography data, 45% of our residents live in greater Minnesota and the rest live in the metro. But in 2025, only 36% of these state housing tax dollars made it to greater Minnesota. So the bill we have in front of us today, what we worked on across the state, is to make sure that we have that geographical balance with these dollars. And it's really going to help when you have, you know, companies and people who live in greater Minnesota or in the metro find a project that they would like to name. It's making sure that their money stays in their communities, hence building their communities up. You'll also see at the end of the bill, there is a repeal of the 2028 sunset. The program has been a smashing success, and we're looking to just remove that this year to really continue to build that energy behind this housing tax credit, continue to grow it. And again, members, the best part about this is that it's community dollars staying in communities to help build the things we need most, which is more homes in this state. So with me, I have some fantastic testifiers who are going to have an even better breakdown of the program and kind of how we got here.
Thank you, Representative Igo, and we will go to your testifiers. The first testifier, please make your way up and state your name.
Co-Vice Chair David, or Joy, excuse me. Co-Chair Gomez, members of the committee, my name is Courtney Schaff. I serve as policy manager for the Minnesota Housing Partnership. MHP drives innovative housing solutions through original research, expert community development support, and advocacy for policies that ensure everyone has a place to call home. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3902. In a few short years, the State Housing Tax Credit has become a tremendously successful program, inspiring over 1,000 contributions and supporting close to 100 affordable housing projects across the state. Initiated by a large coalition of businesses, local governments, and housing leaders and developers, the program was designed to be flexible and simple to work in greater Minnesota and the metro area. And MHP has been a proud champion of this program from inception to implementation, and we continue to facilitate its promotion. As Representative Igo mentioned, we are already seeing the impacts of this program through the preservation of existing homes and construction of new homes in every corner of the state. We estimate the impact of this program in just 3 years to be roughly 260 single-family homes and 1,600 multifamily rental units for an estimated 5,800 people who are more stably housed today because of the program.
The increasing popularity of this program by both contributors and those seeking contributions speaks to both the exploding need for affordable homes and the effective design of this program, which incentivizes public-private partnership to create more homes for Minnesotans. Thank you to Representative Igo for authoring House File 3902. MHP supports the alignment with the Workforce Housing Program for maximum impact and establishing the geographic balance to ensure that the greater Minnesota and metro area communities have access to proportionate resources. And finally, on behalf of our diverse coalition of cities, nonprofits, businesses, and individual contributors, we do strongly support the repeal of the program sunset so that the successful program can become a fixture housing development tool. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Courtney, for that test. And we will go, any questions for Courtney? We'll go to the next testifier. Please state your name and start with your testimony.
Hello, yeah, my name's Drew Gobze. Thank you, Co-Chair Joyne, Co-Chair Gomez, and members of the committee. I'm the Advocacy Director with Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota, the statewide support organization for the 24 Habitat offices across the state, serving 59 counties. I'm here today in support of repealing the sunset for the State Housing Tax Credit Program, which has been a critical tool across the state, helping to finance affordable housing for Minnesotans through taxpayer contributions. Habitat for Humanity is focused on increasing homeownership opportunities, and we're seeing firsthand that the gap in accessible, affordable homeownership is widening. This program has become an effective tool that unlocks private investments from Minnesotans themselves, stretching public resources further while helping build the affordable starter homes needed for low to moderate income families seeking a stable place to call home. For Habitat, this tax credit is particularly effective because it allows us to leverage what we do well, mobilizing community investment to build homes locally. Local businesses and neighbors can make contributions and see those dollars at work in their own communities. That has strengthened public-private partnerships and built real local ownership in solving our housing challenges. We also strongly support policy that prioritizes geographic balance. The majority of contributions are coming from Greater Minnesota, powered by small, mid-sized contributions, but actual funding, like was shared, those outcomes tell a different story with a disproportionate share of funds going to metro area projects. To ensure this tool can be effective statewide as intended, adding this geographic balance will be important. It will help ensure communities across the state, rural and metro alike, have an opportunity to benefit from the investments and meet their housing needs. The impact is already tangible. Investments from the recent round are supporting Habitat homes and families and communities from Winona, Fergus Falls, from the Iron Range to right here in the Twin Cities, creating safe, stable homes and expanding opportunities for families. Please support House File 3902 to ensure this critical program continues. It helps families access affordable homeownership and allows communities to invest in their own growth. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that testimony. And members, any questions for the testifier? Okay, Representative Robbins.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'll have questions for the author at the end.
Okay, thank you. And next up, we got Henry Parker. Please state your name and your testimony.
Co-Vice Chair Joy, Co-Chair Gomez, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Henry Parker, and I am the Vice President of Asset Management at Common Bond Communities. Common Bond is a nonprofit owner, developer, service provider, and long-term steward of affordable and supportive housing, serving families, veterans, and seniors across the Upper Midwest. In Minnesota, we serve nearly 6,000 households across 91 communities and 54 house districts, including 21 communities and districts represented by this committee. I'm here in strong support of the State Housing Tax Credit, House File 3902. Since the program's inception, we have used it to preserve or develop 11 affordable housing properties with 833 units, 465 deeply affordable, and 47 supportive housing. Without it, all those units were at risk of not being developed or preserved. Here's what that looks like on the ground. In St. Paul, we used the credit to preserve three properties serving 670 people, mostly families with an average household income of $19,000. This program allowed us to make immediate improvements, repairing front steps and roofs, replacing sidewalks, and upgrading lighting. These were repairs that otherwise would have taken years or never happened at all. The state housing tax credit works because it is practical and dependable. It flows directly to properties, closes financing gaps that traditional public funding increasingly cannot fill, and is one of the most effective tools we have to stabilize developments that would otherwise have no viable path forward. It also does something no other affordable housing program does. It opens the door to individual donors. At our most recent project in St. Paul, we raised funds from people who live in the community. Donors deeply invested in the success of their neighborhood and eager to continue supporting their new neighbors. In Minnesota, we look out for one another. The state housing tax credit reflects that same spirit, a practical, homegrown way for Minnesotans to invest directly in their neighbors and their communities. On behalf of Common Bond and the residents we serve, I strongly urge your support of House File 3902. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker, for your testimony. Members, do you have any questions? Representative wants to talk to the bill. Okay, with that, I guess any more testifiers for this bill? We will move to Representative Igo to any other questions? Member questions. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Igo, for bringing this bill. I think it's a great idea, and I generally support what's going on. I just had a couple questions. So the definition of metropolitan area, it's citing to a statute that I don't have pulled up. Could you tell me, like, is it 7 counties, 11 counties?
Let me get through my notes here. I have it here somewhere.
Representative Igo.
Yes, I got to pull up my stuff here, Mr. Chair, one second.
Nonpartisan? I think.
Yeah, unless.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, the metropolitan area is the 7-county metro, but excluding a certain number of border cities, Hanover, Rockford. I don't recall the full list.
Thank you. And that gets to my concern about this, and maybe we could just talk about that definition. And after the fact, you can tell me that list, because as a resident and a member who represents Western Hennepin County, my little towns are often excluded from programs like this, Loretto, Maple Plain, Independence, and I just want to make sure that even though we're still in Hennepin County and we often don't get access, I think it maybe should be based on the size of the community rather than a county designation. So I just want to offer that because the little towns in Hennepin County often aren't able to participate in things like this, and we need the help too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins. So this bill doesn't exclude anyone. It's just making sure that we make sure the money gets geographical balance. So none of your communities would be excluded. It's just making sure that we wouldn't have all the money go to one county in the state either.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. But in the set aside intended for greater Minnesota, that's more likely where we would meet the criteria, and we're probably excluded is my guess. So I'd just like you to take a look at that, and I'm happy to work on language with you about that. And then the other question I had is on the amendment. In the second part, it says lines 1.10 and 1.11, the application for when, if they don't use the money in the greater Minnesota pot and it gets sent back to the general amount, it may be allocated to taxpayers for all contributions, whether designated for a specific project or not. I just wondered, why are you making that change?
Representative Igo.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Robbins, it's kind of like a housekeeping measure to make sure that the tax credits get spent. But like I said in my testimony, this year alone, all the dollars were appropriated and handed out in under 2 hours. Like, that's how fast they get used up. So the situation that we would even get to this is a long shot.
Okay.
Representative Robbins, follow up?
I think that's okay. And I would just like to say in a final comment that this is very similar, members, to the proposal we're trying to move in another area to create scholarship granting organizations that people can contribute to and get a tax credit to. And it's working great in housing. And so I would encourage us to consider using this model to get that bill across the finish line in the scholarship grant organizations. Thank you.
Representative Yuki.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is a technical question either for Representative Igo or, and this is my fault because I don't know enough about the program. If we're trying to distribute, how does it work? I don't know the percentage of people that are actually donating and specifying a specific project. If that's a large percentage, how does that work then to have a geographical balance?
Representative Igo.
Yeah, I'll jump in and try to answer that a little for you. So we have in the 25 contribution summary, so there's 248 total contributions. 189 of them were designated. 59 of them were not. But it's making sure that those designations, that the way the bill is set up right now, we want to make sure that if you do designate for your community, it stays in your community and doesn't get gobbled up to other places. Does that make sense?
I think so. I thought the amendment. Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm so sorry. Representative Igo, I thought the amendment was trying to say that we had to have a better geographic distribution. I just didn't know how that worked if, like you just said, you said like 65% or so were designated. What if those designations happen to be in the 7-county metro area? How does that then get out to the greater?
The program is very oversubscribed at this point, right? So this is just going to make sure that we're going to see the opportunities exist equitably between both regions of our state. And if there's talk to increase how much we can put into this program so we can grow it, we can have that conversation too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Igo. You know, I've heard some good things about this program, but I guess one of the, maybe if you can help explain this for me, but how does an individual contribute to this program? And if you know, or maybe House Research knows, what is the mix and makeup, I guess, of the taxpayer makeup? Is it mostly businesses? Is it high-wealth individuals? How does that work?
Representative Igo.
Yes, I have those numbers for you, and I'll actually defer to my testifier from MHP if they want to help me out on this. But I do have the data in front of me. So when you look at the way the amounts are spread out, in the 25 contributions of all, so if you, 49.6% of the contributions made were $2,500 or under. And then the rest are kind of tiered out into different brackets among that. I'm trying to look for my data on corporate versus individual.
From Sigel, would you want your testifier to weigh in?
Yes, and if Courtney would like to weigh in as well.
Cool, Vice Chair Joy, Representative Agbaje. We do have the agency here. I'm not sure if they collect the data between individuals versus corporate donors, but as Representative Igo shared, almost 50% of the contributions in 2025 were within that range of $1,000 as the minimum and $2,500. So we are seeing the majority of the contributions are low dollar amounts.
Representative Baji.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then for an individual, then how do they do that? Do they do that like through their tax return, or is there? You said there's a portal. I guess just trying to understand how that actually works. Like if I wanted to do it.
Co-Vice Chair David, Representative Agbaje, there is a portal that the agency opens up at the beginning of the year, and as Representative Igo has shared, it's kind of increasingly popular that people are kind of getting everything in line to be ready, that when that portal opens, they are ready to hit submit with all of their application materials. And at that point is when they can distinguish between either doing a designated contribution, which we're seeing increasing popularity to, or a general pool that then the agency would determine the distribution within that general pool. So the agency does all the verification after somebody submits their application. And if they are a verified contributor, then they receive a TCC to be used in their when they're filing their tax returns.
And then I guess for projects then that are listed, because I'm kind of thinking of projects in my community, and I'm not necessarily sure how many of them would actually be listed, so they also then need to go through a process through MHFA to be a listed place to contribute then? Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Howard.
Thank you for bringing the bill forward and the work on this. This has been, I think, a really successful program. And we've seen, I would just comment on a few pieces of it. One, this is a tax credit that's really targeted in the sense that all of these dollars are going for affordable housing projects that are some of the hardest projects to fund in an overall budget landscape with housing where we're not doing nearly enough, from my perspective, to make public investments in housing. And so, you know, that's a really you know, all tax credits aren't created equal in my mind, and how they're targeted is a big factor on that. And a big selling point of this is how much this is targeted to outcomes for affordable housing, some of the hardest housing to build and develop all across the state. The second point I want to make is, you know, we had a good hearing on the local homelessness aid yesterday, and, you know, made the case that based on the track record of that program, we absolutely should get rid of the sunset. You know, tax credits often, more so than AIDS, have a sunset for this same purpose, and I think the track record here is showing us that this is meeting its intended purpose. And then the last thing I'd say is, it is interesting, as we think about this in the long term, the fact that in 2 hours, $10 million of this was used, it shows the need for more public investment in housing, I would say. But I have heard from people that sort of said, like, it was like trying to get tickets to a Bruce Springsteen concert to apply. We do have this good mix right now, but finding ways to make sure that this is an accessible program both for individuals and businesses to invest in as it's grown in popularity makes sense. So thanks for bringing the bill forward.
Should I go? Any follow-up? No? Okay. Chair Gomez, or does the department want to weigh in on this one? Chair Gomez.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks to Chair Igo for bringing this. I guess I would never want to disagree with Chair Howard, but in the tax realm, I do feel like I just have to say that there's not an equivalence between removing the sunset on an aid where there are no sunsets on any of the other 13 and removing a sunset completely from a tax credit. I actually think this is sort of an example of why we have sunsets on tax credits, the conversation that we're able to have right now, which is like, okay, we put this in place, we put a sunset on it so that we could have this conversation today, that we could look at its effectiveness, that we can tweak it, that we can make sure it's doing what it's supposed to do. When we passed, you know, the Tax Expenditure Review Commission, we sort of unofficially, I guess on our side, maybe implemented, you know, a principle that we want tax credits to expire so that we can have these conversations. So I guess just on that one thing, I would say, like, this looks like a very successful program. I'm very open to extending the sunset. I'm not probably open to removing the sunset on a tax credit like this, but I look forward to having more conversations about this and other things as we move forward. So thanks again, Representative Igo, for bringing the bill.
Okay, Chair Gomez, Representative Igo, wrap up your bill.
Yeah.
Well, first off, Chair Gomez, thank you for those comments. Look forward to working on it. Like I said, I your points are very valid, and I think that's why it's good we're here talking about this program, so more people are going to hear about it after today. But to all the committee members, thank you for the opportunity to present this bill to you all today. It's a really exciting opportunity, and I think the overall arch I want to say here is when we talk about what these dollars are going to, it's our people and our communities finding ways to be the gap financing to get these projects done. And when you create these partnerships in our communities, in our cities, in our state, we're going to build stronger communities. And the projects that are happening are making more affordable homes and more diverse housing options. And when you combine both those things together, you create stability for the state of Minnesota. Create stability in housing. And the best part about this, you're building this stability with people who are giving in your community. So, I mean, I think this is just a wonderful way for us as a state to continue to support that kind of grassroots thing that makes Minnesota so great, and we can keep developing that housing. And I'll save my housing pitch for another day, but this is something we can do to take a little chunk out of the pie and keep working towards it. So thank you again, committee members, for letting me hear it today in committee.
Thank you, Representative Igo. I renew my motion for House File 3902 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill. And one other announcement I have is staff, there are donuts up here. Oh, sorry. Staff, there are donuts up here if you want to grab one.
Mr. Chair, if I could, before we go to Chair Gomez. If I could, down in the bonding committee, they went down to get Chairman Igo, and they said he's needed in taxes. And they didn't say that about me. I'm very sensitive.
Mr. Chair?
I'll go to Chair Gomez.
Thank you.
Because we got something to share, too.
Yeah, just You may not be needed in taxes, but you're highly wanted in taxes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair David, do you know the department stood up and was excited to come and give a position on a bill while you were gone?
Thanks.
Any other discussion? With that, we will be adjourned. Thank you.